deadheads at about 5th and College or 5th and Montgomery in the vehicular lane. They seem to have no compunction about the traffic that's in back of them. So I guess I want either want to add an amendment that makes sure that Portland Streetcar is included in the exclusion from the vehicular lane.
We're going to be doing an additional some code amendments in the future for some other Title 16 changes, and I'll put that one into it. In the meantime,
it's a real-time problem.
It's happening now. If you want to make an amendment and add it
to
this.
Explain it some more.
The streetcar simply stops on Southwest 5th, southbound. Deadheads means it's waiting for the schedule to catch up, and it's in the vehicular lane. So traffic just piles up behind it, and they seem to have no hurry to get out of there.
And what's the solution then?
Streetcars are prohibited from stopping in the vehicular lane.
We can work with TriMet to have them not have them make that a time makeup stop.
So one of the reasons that the streetcar stops there is because it's single track from 5th down to 4th. There's a hold space so that the vehicles coming up and out of the South Waterfront area, they have to take turns getting through the single-tracked area at the Urban Renewal, the Urban Center. So it's not necessarily just a schedule makeup, but it has to do with who calls the signal first. Your point is very well taken.
I think southbound traffic in the one lane headed south on 5th Avenue takes precedence over what may be going on 4th Avenue or further into the Urban Renewal area.
We that can may also, be, but I'd be much more comfortable than on the fly making an amendment based on an experience with having you do an analysis.
Right, and we can also work with signals to look at see about the timing function too for that.
So, do you want us to come back next week with that information?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
I'd like to get this approved today. Happy to file another ordinance for next week as an emergency to deal with that, because I don't want to leave us for 1 week longer without these codes in place.
I can wait a week.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I got to go take a look at that. Any other discussion from council? Anything else anyone would like to say?
Mr. Mayor, City Council, Vince Jarmer, Commander of the Portland Police Bureau Transit Police Division. I just want to support the changes, of course, as we have talked about some additional changes that we need to make, possibly. But I think what this does, as far as public safety goes, provides a bright line for people to understand citizens, bicycles, pedestrians, and vehicles on the bus mall, what the actual pattern is now. Getting to where people are obeying the bright line, that will be a chore, and it'll be my job to do, or partially my job. But I think it's very definitive, and I think that we're about 95% there with some additional work.
Thanks for your work. And if the council doesn't know, Teresa has been with this project and helped to shape it along with TriMet, and has done a fantastic job advocating on our behalf. And I want to thank you for your work.
Thank you very much.
All right. Anyone signed up to testify?
I do not know.
Is anyone? Thank you for your testimony. Anyone wishes to testify? Come on up. Yeah. Welcome to the City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name, and the clock in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Margot Menison, and I'm representing the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. We want to thank the City of Portland and TriMet for all of their work designing the new transit mall. We appreciate that cyclists have access to these streets. But we know there are concerns regarding cyclist right turn movements, and we believe there is a solution to making this movement safe and intuitive and legal. And so we hope that the city will take into account this issue, making any decisions regarding auxiliary lane designations. Thank you.
You have an idea to make bicycle right turn lanes doable?
Doable and intuitive so that all the roadway users know what cyclists are doing, and so that it's a uniform behavior.
What's the idea, if you could sketch it for us?
We're working with the city to develop maybe an on-street legend, a pavement marking, sort of with an arrow to show how they're supposed to do this. We call it a Copenhagen turn. So aligning themselves with the cross street to then proceed straight with traffic at the light.
Mayor, this is very anecdotal as someone who's driving a lot on Fifth, but I would say that there's a little bit of confusion on who can do what. And I noticed, for example, that cyclists generally will pass traffic going into what appears to be the bus lane or the max lane. And the markings, I mean, I have to get used to the new markings, and there's a lot going on. Right. And I think we all have to be educated. But one concern I have is that a lot of cyclists get out of the dedicated lane the cars are in, and I'm afraid with a bus or a max or something flying by, someone's going to get hurt. Yeah. And also, people do seem to be pretty frustrated by inability to make certain turns,
right,
which in a car, you know, it's a little harder to do. On a cycle, on a bicycle, people seem to be pretty inventive. And I think there's some. When we have an active max presence, I think there's some real safety issues there, and I'm not sure everyone understands the rules of the road at this point.
Well, safety is our number one concern, and education will be a big part of whatever solution we develop or we're working to develop.
Just to be clear right now, because safety is our number one priority as well, no right turns for bikes.
Right.
No right turns for cars. Just want to be really clear, and stay out of the middle lane and the far right lanes. Bikes, cars, that's for buses only. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll come back next week, and we'll, you know, as we figure out on the ground how to make this as safe and functional as possible, council should expect that we'll be coming back to them as needed. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, this is really going to evidence that bicyclists, bumper stickers, share the road. And I think as we are going to be a very busy downtown city, we're going to have to all be very, very careful and to drive slowly and be careful and watch out for pedestrians and bikes and buses and whatever else is in our streets downtown. And so I'm supportive of this and also recognizing that it's going to take some changes in behavior because it's going to be a complicated system and we want to make it work. Aye.
Adams.
So if a bicyclist does want to go right, they have to get off their bike, go to the corner, like I do, wait for the walk sign, and walk across the street, just to be clear. Thank you. Aye. 844 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading? Council calendar, item 845.
Vacate a portion of Southeast 133rd Place, north of Southeast Ramona Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 845 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance 846?
A claim of Kamishia R. Riddle.
Are there any questions from council regarding this requested pay of claim? Please, anyone wishes to testify on 846? Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for being here in case we had questions. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Thanks for your work. Please read the title for emergency ordinance, council calendar item 847.
Authorized 5-year agreement with Richard Sherman and Associates for actuarial services not to exceed $118,130.
Does council have any questions regarding this item? Does anyone wish to testify regarding this item? Sue, would you please call the roll on 847?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Would you please call, or would you please read the title for council calendar item 849?
Accept bid of Nutter Corporation for the Powell Butte Reservoir 2 site development project in the amount of $3,707,777.
Good morning, Mr. Bear.
Marty Barry Adams, a member of City Council.
848 was pulled back, returned to the office of Commissioner Fish.
No.
That's what I have here. No?
It's your ordinance.
I think it's yours.
The Albany Community Bank.
We should read the title.
Oh, it was pulled.
Later for 848.
Did I not announce it being pulled? All right. 848 is returned to Mayor Adams's office, unless there are objections. Now we're back on 849.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases, and before you is a request to approve it and execute a contract, and I'll highlight a couple of facts related to the process. This is for, on behalf of the Water Bureau, it's the Powell Butte Reservoir Number 2 Site Development Project. We had a construction estimate of $13.2 million, and because of the competitive construction market or environment, we received 14 bids on this particular wow. project. They ranged from the low of $3.7 million up to $7.39 million. And the contractor that we've selected is Nutter Corporation. They are a local contractor. The amount of the contract is $3,707,777. We identified in the solicitation document seven different divisions of work. They are self-performing all but two of those, and of the subcontract amounts, they have indicated their intent to work or identify 88.4% of the subcontracted dollars to minority women emerging small businesses. So they are in full compliance with our EEO, equal benefits, and our business license. And we have a representative from the Water Bureau here in case there are any project details.
Discussions from council?
So the project was initially estimated at $13.2 million with an optimal level of confidence, and this bid comes in at $3.7 million. Why the big difference?
Partially, we are finding a significant drop in between the engineer's estimate and the actual contract amount. I think it's simply due to the environment that we're in. We have, for example, we had 14 bids on this. That's very unusual, but it's becoming more the norm.
And are we now confident that this bid is an optimal and it's not going to come back for multiple changes?
That's the indication from the Water Bureau. That's correct.
And that's the contract. That's,
yep.
We would not pay more.
Any other discussion from council? Anyone wishes to testify on council item 849? This is a purchasing report.
Move acceptance.
Second. Been moved and seconded to accept the purchasing report. So would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
So thank you for your work on this, Commissioner Leonard, for your staff's responsiveness. My understanding is that the savings will remain in the capital improvement category of the Water Bureau's budget to address fluctuations, unplanned work, and then potential relief for next year's ratepayers. So this is excellent work. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, our efforts to fast-track infrastructure projects to get work out the door quicker than we had planned and to achieve savings in the process is incredibly well illustrated with this council calendar item, this contract. Congratulations, Commissioner Leonard. Aye. 849 is approved. Can you please read the title for 850?
Amend contract with Walker Macy for design and construction administration of the Waterfront Park, Ankeny Plaza, and Street Improvements Project.
Any questions from council? Anyone wishes to test?
Okay. So why don't I tee it up real quickly, Mayor? We have a panel. Today the Parks Bureau is, if I could call forward Eileen Argentina, Sandra Bertzos, and Keith Witkowski. Today the Parks Bureau is bringing forward another project started under the leadership of my predecessor, Dan Saltzman, the new Portland Saturday Market space in Waterfront Park. If you haven't been there lately, this new space is 95% complete, and Saturday Market has already moved in and is going great guns. It's absolutely beautiful and a wonderful addition to the Old Town Skidmore area. By the way, the mayor and I attended the ribbon cutting a couple weeks ago, and it really is spectacular. We've had a chance to brief all of the council offices on this matter and respond to questions, and there's a Q&A in your packet. And I'm assured this time when I say there's a Q&A in your packet, I mean just not my packet. We're being less selfish and possessive with our Q&As.
Very generous of you.
Before I turn to staff to make a very brief presentation, I just want to express my appreciation to Walker Macy and to Doug Macy in particular. He and his talented staff have put their heart and soul into this project, which has certainly had its share of challenges. Doug can be very proud of helping to create yet another signature park in our downtown. Eileen and Sandra, would you like to make a very brief presentation?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Just a couple of comments. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners, and thanks for your time. I'm Eileen Argentina, Parks and Recreation Services Manager. In 2006, the city decided to give Saturday Market a new home, It was part of a larger revitalization of the Old Town Skidmore District, bringing Mercy Corps, University of Oregon, and other tenants into the district. We're now in the home stretch of this project. Today we're requesting council approval of an amendment to our design contract with Walker Macy to close out the project. The funds for the amendment have been identified. Will not require general funds. We expect construction to be complete by the end of July. Portland Saturday Market has been operating on site for over a month. And if you've been there, as the commissioner says, you'll have seen what a success the new location is. A quick run through on the numbers on the contract amendment. The original design contract was for $1,294,000. Previous amendments, cumulatively under the 25% threshold requiring council approval, brought the contract to $1,546,000. This amendment, which is necessitated by changes in the construction contract, will add $415,230 for a total of $1,961,524. The construction contract has been managed by PDC. The additional design services were requested by PDC as the construction process went forward. The amendment will be paid for through a combination of urban renewal funds, $165,230, and systems development charges, $250,000. In total, PDC funds will cover 1.7 out of the 1.9 million design contract cost. Excuse me. Sandra Bertos, who's managed the design process for parks, is here to provide a little bit of information on the project. And you, the commissioner indicated, you have a Q&A. And Keith Witkowski from PDC is also here to answer questions if needed.
Good morning. I'm Sandra Bertos, project manager for the design contract of the Waterfront Park, Ankeny Plaza, and Street Improvements Project. I know you're all at least somewhat familiar with this project. I'd like to just briefly reacquaint you with it. This image is up there. Good. This image shows the two project areas outlined in red. Those areas are the First Avenue under the and the area under the Burnside Bridge between First and NATO, and the in the MAX station area, and the other area is, of course, in Waterfront Park in the Ankeny area. These images are of the MAX retail area that's under the Burnside Bridge. The primary goal of improvements in this area was to improve the sense of public safety by activating a previously dead space and improving lighting and sight lines. It includes a 2,100 square foot retail space whose curved glass facade now occupies what was once an overly wide paved area behind the MAX platform, thereby reducing the opportunities for illicit activities in that area. The improvements in this area also include changing out the Burnside Bridge stairs to more transparent stair treads and risers, moving some of the TriMet signage and ticket machines to align with the bridge columns, thereby reducing the sight lines through the area. Sorry, not reducing, opening up the sight lines through the area, giving the underbridge of the underside of the bridge all the way over to NATO a fresh coat of white paint, brightening up that area, and replacing the old underbridge high-pressure sodium lighting that provides that orangish cast with a new energy-efficient, very bright white light. This project, as you've probably heard, was extremely challenging due to its accelerated design and construction schedules, large numbers of stakeholders with diverse requirements, weather impacts, late permit requirements, utility service issues, unforeseen site conditions that have been caused by the layers of Portland's history that were undocumented in this part of town, many of them utilities that no one knew were there, that had been buried over one and over all the decades of changes in the area. This caused daily surprises that were caused, you know, we had to solve regularly as they were discovered. There's a list about a dozen key stakeholders and partners on this project. Multnomah County, TriMet, Saturday Market as the major tenant, Portland Parks and Recreation as the owner, PDC, Portland Water Bureau, the Bureau of Environmental Science Services, and many other city bureaus, just to name a few. This project required substantial interagency coordination and complex problem solving. The challenges we encountered along the way pushed the team to develop creative and innovative solutions. This image shows the waterfront park portion of the project from the bird's eye view, from the river. To orient you, the Burnside Bridge is on the extreme right, with the Ankeny Pump Station just to the left and backing up to the river. And Ankeny Plaza is just across NATO Parkway, where you see the four white columns. The gorgeous new market canopy structure designed by TVA architects as part of the Walker Macy team is nestled comfortably between the rows of existing large oak trees and sits upon a podium that contains a portion of the interactive water feature weaving underneath the canopy. The market podium steps down to the circular plaza. The river overlook is in the foreground and has already become quite a popular viewpoint and respite from the busy Esplanade traffic. The large interactive water feature, the Bill Nadeau Legacy Fountain, is on the left. And that fountain is going to provide much summer fun for all ages. It will also provide year-round visual identity for the park, thereby creating a significant northern gateway into the park, one of the primary goals of the 2003 Waterfront Park Master Plan for this area of the park. The portion of the fountain under the canopy will run when Saturday market or other events are not scheduled to help activate the space with positive family-friendly activities. When Saturday Mark is using the space, the podium portion of the fountain will be turned off, and it will look something like this. Can you tell the difference? The top image is an artist's rendering by Walker Macy during design in 2007, while the bottom image is a photograph, untouched by Photoshop, taken by Walker Macy the first weekend that Saturday Market opened in the new space in Waterfront Park in May of 2009.
Well, there's an umbrella in the real one.
Yeah.
They totally had this wrong.
They moved the booths around a little bit. I know. It was so unfair. The other thing you might note that the person who photographed it mentioned to me was just disappointed that it wasn't a very sunny day that first weekend. So you can tell the blue sky in the top one is just much more lovely than the bottom one.
Not to us Portlanders.
Portland Parks and Rec would like to thank again Ann Nadeau Campbell, the Portland Parks Foundation, and all the individual donors for their civic vision and generosity to raise the private funds towards the Bill Nadeau Legacy Fountain. We'd also like to thank our partners at PDC and all the other bureaus for their support and very hard work to make this project happen. This project is fully designed, funded, and nearing the end of construction, and today we'd like authorization from you to amend the consultant's contract to compensate them for the extra services we've had to request to get the design constructed and to solve the multitude of challenges that arose during construction. With that, I'd like to thank you for your attention, and we are available to answer any questions you might have.
Sandra, before we go to questions, could you go back to the first slide for a sec? And I just want to point I just want to point something out to my colleagues. If you look at the top center of this picture, there's the space that's between what is the new Mercy Corps building and the other side of the bridge, which is the White Stag. There was a parking lot in the middle, and for a number of years, that was used for a number of homeless ministry programs. The parking lot is now going to actually be rehabbed and used as a parking lot. And as a consequence, the city's been asked to help a number of suburban churches that do food ministry programs to relocate. Hannah Kuhn's been leading that effort in my office, and this is not without challenge, I can tell you. But it's also a pretty extraordinary opportunity since hundreds of people come into our community and provide services. So we are in the process of looking for alternative locations within the vicinity of the existing site, as well as looking at sites that have been identified north and south. And if any of my colleagues have some suggestions for places that have meet our minimum specifications, which is preferably something with a covering, something that is accessible to people who are either homeless individuals that tend to congregate in Old Town Chinatown, or people who are residents of SROs and others that use these services for part of their meals. We would love to hear from you, and we hope to be making some recommendations shortly. And Sandra and Eileen, again, thank you for your presentation, and thank you for, at my request, making sure that my colleagues were briefed on this issue and their questions were hopefully addressed in advance of this hearing. But we'll now take questions from my colleagues.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Beat her to the punch. Could you go back to that retail space slide? So that retail space is facing First?
Yes, it's
adjacent
on
to the University of Oregon building?
It's right under the bridge, just centered under the bridge on the west side. It's kind of where the bridge abutment is, and it used to be just some garage door. It was storage for Saturday Market, actually.
And so it's like 2,100 square feet. Is there a tenant yet, or is that?
I believe that PDC is working with the U of O.
No.
Oh, they have four potential tenants.
Great.
Kevin informs me.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good work, too.
Commissioner Fritz.
And I'm not sure that the questions are directed at you there, more maybe more for purchasing. But I'm wondering about the original certainty regarding the price when we, when this contract first came to council. Do you happen to remember what the original certainty was?
You want to jump in on there? Because my understanding is, before my time, but there were some very low confidence estimates. And when the excavation uncovered some things that were not anticipated, including the Civil War era Leonard family plot that had to be addressed and relocated to an appropriate place. It's Ebenezer Leonard's plot that apparently was not permitted, but his remains have been preserved. And
sure wasn't a fort.
But
why it's wrong to share your feelings.
In the briefings,
used against you.
In the briefings that I've received, because of the history of that site and because of the shipping, particularly the shipping history, that area through excavation presented just a myriad of challenges which were not anticipated until something went. But my understanding, Keith, is it was originally a very, very low confidence estimate.
Yeah, the original $8.5 million was very low confidence. Go ahead.
Well, and some of the, I understand why. I'm also questioning for the future, looking to make sure that we don't have as many overruns, what the proper timing of the public process is, and some of the public process which changed some of the choices that were made as far as what particular items were purchased and not purchased.
And, you know, I think it was, you know, I didn't work on it directly, but I kind of equate it to when we renovated City Hall back in the mid-90s, where you open up, in that case, an old building, in this case, an old part of Portland. The only other real partner is a public partner, whether it's a bureau or the city or whatever. And as you find things, whether it's the old freeway, some of the items that Commissioner Fish talked about, in order to address them, you've got to continue to invest more money. And then as you move forward, I mean, I know our board, when they looked at increasing the budgets in December and again in May of 2008, that they really struggled with making these decisions. And a lot of it was Portland Saturday Market or others came in and said, okay, to do this right, now we need to make sure the painting that Sandra talked about, we need to build the stairs, we need to have a better retail space. And it escalated the cost in a situation where it was a purely public project. So the way we do projects and contracting at PDC is that when we go to the board, we'll have the development agreement or whatever you want to call it in terms of the original estimate. And there's a built-in, usually it's around 10% contingency. And if the project goes over that 10%, we have to return to the board to get approval to increase it.
In this case, since it is a partnership between the city and PDC, your board got to approve it before, and we're now approving it now, but essentially that it's done now. So my choice here is to either pay the people who've done the work or not pay the people who've done the work, and it seems like it would be fair to pay them for doing the work. So I'm wondering, as we move forward and do more projects, how we can make sure that the council and the Portland Development Commission both have an opportunity to decide, yes, we want to spend this more money because we want to buy a fountain or fancier lights or whatever it is. These things add cost to a project, and I don't like being in a position that I have to approve this and use citywide SDC funds because the decisions have already been made.
So can I just offer a suggestion? Because in conversations with your office, a number of the potential issues were ventilated, and you know we have a 25% threshold that triggers coming to council. I know that you have in the past questioned whether that should be adjusted. I don't know what the sweet spot is because I don't think council wants to have to address every single modification of a contract. I think we probably have nothing but that on our calendar. But I think that's a good question to ask. Is the 25% threshold the right number in terms of how PDC and the city work together when they are partners in a project? And here, you know, PDC was the essentially managed the contract, and the city had a role, but it was basically a minor, a subordinate partner, and certainly financially a minor partner. If there are some ideas that you want to brainstorm with Bureau of Purchases and Purchasing and PDC, we'd be all ears. We'd be very receptive to it. I think there are some valuable lessons learned about this project, and one of them is building in contingencies that are realistic when you have a site that has multiple challenges. And I think in the future, I think Parks is likely to suggest that the contingency be bigger to anticipate both the unforeseen and the foreseeable costs. But I think this is a fair game for some discussion, and we would welcome any insights you have, Commissioner, as to how we might improve our process.
Thank you, and I know that we share.
If we could just follow on that, my understanding is from folks that I talked to that the Salmon Street fountain did not encounter the kind of complications that this encountered, and it was the last major sort of intrusion into the ground on the waterfront site. So there was, in looking into this, I'm not sure that there's a way that this could have been anticipated any better. So I do think now that we know, building in bigger contingencies, maybe making more upfront, figuring out drilling like we do in transportation to see if there's anything below. It is a lessons learned, and I do think it'll be memorialized by further work in the waterfront park area.
And I certainly appreciate Commissioner Fisher's staff and all of you coming in and going over these issues, and it speaks to the larger issues that Commissioner Fisher alluded to, that we have in the code 25% over budget before it comes back to council. I'd like to look at that again, especially for large projects. It seems like that's unreasonable. I would like a purchasing report detailing the level of certainty and the final outcome on a sample of projects, say 20 over the last 3 years, or the ones that came back to council. Did we think we had a good certainty, and why did that not turn out right? How do we do these contracts? And I'd also like to have an evaluation to determine when a contract has been underestimated by the low bidder. Would we have gone with the second low bidder if were they going to perform more services for the increased amount of money? Did we end up paying more? And do we have a feedback and evaluation loop so that in the next project, when a company comes in and is the low bidder, that we have some confidence in their past performance? And that would include not only whether they did what they said they were going to do for their bid, but also things like environmental impacts, worker safety, a number of things which I'm not sure we currently capture in our bidding process. And maybe that requires state legislative changes.
Can I just address one point you said? Because I think we're at risk of mixing apples and oranges. And I think those are all obviously fair game for any council member to inquire into. But when you expanded the scope of your comment to people who underbid and then are sort of rewarded for getting in the door at an artificially low bid and then seeking adjustments, I simply want to contrast that with this, because they're not even related. This is a process where there's no question that the original bidding met our requirements. What changed was the community expectations about the project and challenges at the site, which frankly could have been budgeted in through a contingency and we wouldn't be having this conversation. The part about the community, when you have multiple stakeholders and people saying along the way, hey, let's expand the scope of this project to include something else, and you have people at the table, I think we should have a discussion about how we handle that process, but I'll let you referee that, because when you have 15 or 20 partners, all well-intentioned, and along the way expand the scope of the project to meet clearly perceived public benefits, and we expand the contract to cover them, that's not technically gaming our system. That is literally expanding the scope of the work, and that our process anticipates.
That's a good clarification. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I contend that we originally bid out a contract based on a certain expectation of what we're getting for it, and that if we're wanting to add amenities, then I'm questioning at what point it comes back to council to say, do you want to buy this? Is this what we want to spend systems development charges citywide on further enhancing this particular project or not? And I'm questioning the whole public process, city process, and just seeing a lot of questions, which maybe there are some good answers to, but I would like to understand them better.
I think they're very good questions. I think one of the challenges for the city has been that the procurement process is actually not one sort of fluid administrative managerial process, and that hopefully with our new SAP system, we will actually be able to start having just regular managerial reports that will be able to automatically flag above and below change orders requested of stakeholders versus change orders required by unknown conditions versus change orders. So I think your suggestions, you know, are incredibly useful. They've been asked before. The ability to implement has been held back by really antiquated systems that hopefully we'll be able to get on top of. So I would see, you're not, Commissioner Saltzman?
Yeah, I would just like to add, as Parks Commissioner at the time, that this was a project that was done at an incredibly, lots of eyes on the project, very tight timelines, Saturday market, freaking out about its future. And, you know, so, and Mercy Corps having very firm deadlines about their project. So I think there, and I think basically every checkpoint in the way was brought to council where there were major cost issues, although, you know, PDC did pay for, you know, pay for this project for the most part. So I do think that this was a pretty under the microscope project and had some very good timelines. I want to compliment the staff, PDC and Parks for meeting very complicated project like this. And I would just point out the discussion about 25% change orders, Commissioner Fritz, you know, each commissioner and the mayor can impose their own limit. In fact, I have a 10% change order for all my bureaus. So there's no need. The 25% is a ceiling. You can require your bureaus to bring change orders that are 10% or less, and I think that's kind of a healthy thing because I think 25% is a thing that, you know, most contractors kind of count on that now. As it's, well, we're going to bid, but we know we're guaranteed 25% more without any council scrutiny. If they know they only get 10% more without any council scrutiny, then they're more apt to think about it more.
Thank
so
you very much.
It's discretionary to each commissioner in charge of their bureaus.
And I see this as a good topic for a work session in the future as we learn more about the capabilities of SAP.
Mayor, we're voting on this next week?
Correct.
So before we excuse our panel, I just want to thank them for their good work. It's a pleasure to work with you.
And thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
A50 moves to a second reading. Could you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 851, second, or vote only?
Amend City Code requirements regarding district property management license to include certain owner-occupied housing.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Well, first I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for his leadership in presenting this matter to Council. I want to thank staff for furnishing us with written responses to the questions we had, which were very helpful to me. And if I had any doubt how to vote on this, I have to tell you, I got one email which sealed the deal from me. And it was an email from a former city commissioner named Gretchen Kafoury, who lives in a condominium that would be affected by this. And she said, from her point of view, while she doesn't relish having to pay more for anything, she thought this was a question of equity. That if the services that were being provided and benefited everyone in the district were being paid for by less than all the property owners, there was an equity issue. And she simply did not understand why owners of nonprofit housing, for example, providing vital services to people in our community were being charged, but condominium owners were not. So while she certainly had a built-in conflict she could have declared as someone who was impacted by it, she said she thought this was simply a question of equity and fairly distributing the cost burden on property owners. And I think that's the right point here. And we had a number of people say that the process could have been improved. And I, in my 1 year on the job, and yes, I've recently had my 1 year anniversary. To some of you, it feels longer.
Seems like you just got here 10 years ago.
I recognize we can always improve our process, and every issue we deal with, people tell us there's more we can do in terms of outreach and engagement. I take that to heart. But to me, this is a question of equity, and I think the case has been made, and therefore I'm going to support the initiative. Bye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think there were equity issues raised also by condominium owners about projects that are within the business improvement district boundaries and projects that are without, without, and many of those projects are new. And I do think that we do, with the Portland Business Alliance, need to revisit the issue of the proper boundaries for the business improvement district or the clean and safe improvement district, because I do think there are some equity issues there. There's also costs associated with increasing the service area. I understand that, but I think there were some good points made. Fundamentally, though, when I thought about many of the arguments made last week by condominium owners, sure, nobody wants to pay more, and nobody likes to sort of be assessed something as opposed to voluntarily paying it. But the voluntary approach has been proven to not work on a consistent basis. I do think that when you think of apartment building owners, like condominium homeowners associations, they often do and have their own private security and other things. So I don't think that argument is compelling in terms of exempting the condominiums from this business improvement fee. So I do vote aye.
Leonard.
Well, first of all, this is really a testament. And I wish Mike Kuykendall was here, and I hope Bernie passes on my remarks to him. But this is an outstanding program. This is really, I don't know if other cities do this or not. If they don't, they should. I mean, as I mentioned last week, actually gone out and walked with some of the employees of Clean and Safe in a variety of capacities, and I just couldn't be more impressed. And it was interesting, even the most virulent critics of the program always precede their criticism with, this is a good program. It works well. Which I found to be a huge compliment, and the Business Alliance should be rightly proud, as they are, of this program, and not just the security it provides, but the jobs it provides to people who used to be dependent upon the system. They're now part of the solution to many of the problems in downtown. And the second thing is that some of the condo owners observed that it is their presence, actually, that causes downtown to be safer. And I have to respectfully disagree. Condos only began popping up in downtown after Clean and Safe started doing its work, and people could actually imagine living downtown with the improved conditions. And I certainly want to acknowledge that and make that really clear for the record, that this program has really changed on a variety of levels the dynamics of downtown Portland, and all for the positive. And I'm very proud to work with the program, to work with Mike Kuykendall, who does an outstanding job, who also happens to be one of the best bass players I've ever heard as well, along with Mike Reese, who is a fantastic lead guitar player, which you all will hear more about soon.
As long as, Commissioner, you don't intend to sing with that ensemble.
No promises, dude. but they really do a great job, and there's a great synergy there with both of those guys and what's happening downtown, and I'm very pleased to support this. Aye.
Fritz.
This is a very good program, and I support adding the condominiums. I'm concerned from written and oral testimony that there can be a legal challenge to the formula and its basis with regard to home ownership, and that could be costly and unnecessary. I believe that the city and the Business Income District, Business Improvement District, and the Portland Business Alliance should sit down with the homeowners associations of the condominiums and work sooner rather than later on improving the formula for assessments. My understanding from the testimony was that they were estimates rather than actual assessments, and it seems like there should be some room to look at that 15-year-old formula to figure out whether, in fact, those are the assessed value, the square footage, and the number of elevators are the appropriate factors to consider in looking at exactly what each condominium homeowners association should pay. I'm concerned that the appeal process to the Revenue Bureau only involves whether or not the assessment is incorrect, not whether the formula is incorrect. And we have some scope in figuring out this out, and I encourage the city staff, the Portland Business Alliance, and the homeowners to get together in the meantime and look at that, because we could certainly, I would be very favorable in bringing together a new formula, which I understand is in an attachment to the ordinance, and we could probably amend that relatively easily. My understanding is there is a reassessment of their overall formula in the next couple of years. That's in 2011, it's up for renewal. And I would expect the Condominium Homeowners Association to be very active in and participants in that, including looking at whether the boundary should be expanded. That the fact that these businesses, property owners do benefit from the services is compelling to me. And I recognize that they also pay property taxes for police and cleaning services. So do the rest of the city. And there are special benefits to living downtown. It's a wonderful place. And that it's not, it should be that everybody who benefits more should contribute more. So with that, I vote aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for sponsoring this and bringing this forward. I think it's, and I want to thank the Portland Business Alliance for standing behind it. The two underlying principles of our tax and fee system are that you should pay more the more services you use, and you should pay more based on how much you make or proportionality. I think that this is definitely in keeping with these two principles, especially the first. I think it's a simple matter of fee and tax fairness. I'm going to support it. I also would like you to return, though, with the boundary sort of expansion sooner than later. I thought there is a good case to be made for having the boundary to go to I-405 at least, and maybe some other changes, but that can follow up with this effort. So good work. Thanks. Aye. All right, 851 is approved. I understand we have a 4/5. That's a change to a contract. Very troubling, very troubling. Commissioner Fritz?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you please read the 4/5 council calendar title for 851-1?
Amend grant agreement with Resolutions Northwest for an additional $1,500 for facilitation of retreat for diversity and civic leadership and neighborhood coalition community leadership.
Commissioner Fritz.
Well, I apologize for bringing this on the 4/5 agenda. And
it's very troubling, very troubling.
It's very troubling to me, let me tell you.
Fresh person hazing
here. It's the amount of money that I have a lot of questions
about. I have a problem with
that. Well, Commissioner Leonard, to me, it's the slippery slope. I mean, where do you draw the line?
It is. No, you're of like minds.
Today it's $1,500, tomorrow, and it's going to keep happening. Yeah. And,
it is in keeping with
percentage overrun.
I'd like to know who's watching
overrun.
I'd also like to know who put this out for bid, what they were thinking at the time when they did.
All right,
stop it, you folks. This is in keeping with the council's agreement during the budget process that we would try to direct mediation facilitation contracts to Resolutions Northwest, one of our very valued partners. I'm very glad to report that the county was able to find money in their budget to help fund Resolutions Northwest, and this is needed to do. We needed to do it today because it's in the current fiscal year.
Questions? Discussion? This is an emergency. Would you please call? Anyone wish to testify? Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Out of respect for my colleague, I'm going to set aside some of the heartburn this causes me and just vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
And those in my bureaus will please note the ribbing that my colleagues have given me for this and never do this to me again. Aye.
Adams?
We tease because we love. You're doing a fantastic job as commissioner in charge of ONI. I wholeheartedly support this. Aye. We are recessed until 2 p.m. I will not be here.